This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look at last week's stories. I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Joey Delahunty. Today, we will be looking at candidates from a local election, checking in on the ISU College Republicans, and taking a look at the Academic Senate and their take on the university budget. With only days until the election, politicians of all sorts are vying for attention. We had the opportunity to speak with Morgan Phillips, a 24-year-old who's running for the Illinois House in District 105 against incumbent Dennis Tipsord Jr.
So you're running for state representative, right?
Yes.
You are notably quite young for that.
Yeah.
What sort of spurred you into getting involved in politics?
Well, honestly, it was that I'm young. Like, I think we as young people need more representation in government. A lot of young people don't vote. You know, they don't get involved. That's always kind of bothered me because I can see, like, how all this is going to affect our future. And for me, I mean, I don't just want to sit idly by while the future happens. I kind of want to be a part of shaping it instead of just letting it shape me. So my goal with running is to basically be kind of that voice for our future, to actually think about, like, I mean, you know, like, I'm 25, I'm going to be around for a while longer. So what are these things, like, everything that comes across my desk, the different bills that are proposed, all that kind of stuff, what is that going to look like, you know, say 60 years from now, you know, when I'm in, like, my 80s? What is that going to mean for me then? Like, what will that mean for kids then? You know, people that will be my age then. Like, are they going to look back at the decisions we've made now and be annoyed because we made mistakes and we've screwed them over? Because I know there's a lot of people our age that feel that way about people from the past. As they think that the decisions they made, you know, things like ignoring climate change and other issues like that, that those kinds of things are now we have to deal with them. I mean, just think about, like, the deficit, right? Like, those are all things that are now coming down on us that we're going to have to pay for, even though we obviously had no hand in that because we weren't even born yet. So for me, I want to maybe help avoid having things like that happen in the future, just because, I mean, I think it's wrong, and I think it's kind of a shame. I want the world to be a better place for the next generation, and hopefully by running, if I win, I can help make it a better place.
So how's the campaign been going? What sort of issues have you been facing? What's been going well?
I would say, like, doing things, talking to people, going door to door, all that's been going pretty well. I mean, people are usually pretty friendly when they meet you in person. There's only, you know, there's a certain level of rudeness you're not going to hit. But, I mean, a lot of them actually like that I'm young. You know, they're not used to seeing a young person getting involved. And, I mean, even in a lot of communities I'm working in, like, yeah, they skew older. But, I mean, they recognize, a lot of them have kids sometimes, or they have grandkids. And they can kind of recognize me in that younger generation. And they're just excited to see that somebody younger is getting involved and out there and, like, coming and talking to them. Honestly, sometimes they're kind of surprised. I mean, it's a very rural area, so it's not necessarily, like, there's not always that much competition. So they don't get a lot of people who actually come bother them unless they're trying to sell them solar panels or something. So they're kind of excited to see somebody who's actually coming to their door, like, wanting to know what they think, you know, what's going on in their community. And honestly, I've learned a lot. I mean, I've not been to many of these towns, or I've been through them, but I haven't, like, stopped there and talked to people. Because I think my district has something over 50 towns, small towns and, like, bits of cities and things. So it's lots of different kinds of communities, and I think that's a lot of fun. I like talking to people, so.
I've seen in other coverage of you, seen the district you're running described as very conservative. Is that true in your experience?
I think it is conservative, but I'm not sure that it's as conservative as people think it is. I mean, part of it, of course, is that people don't always bother going out and voting. That's not, everybody knows that. And also, like, if you are not conservative, most people don't talk about it. Like, they just keep quiet because they don't want to, like, make their neighbors mad or whatever. But, I mean, I find that people aren't actually that different from each other. I mean, obviously, you know, you may be more conservative or more liberal, but I'm looking more at, like, issues that are going to affect my area specifically. I mean, realistically, the Democrats are in charge, so most of the stuff that's, like, considered, like, the liberal agenda or whatever they want to call it, frankly, it doesn't matter how I vote on it. It's going to go one way or the other regardless. So instead, I'm choosing to focus on things that I think are most relevant to, like, a rural district, because I think that doesn't always get a lot of representation in Springfield, because obviously there's lots of people coming from, like, Chicago and other larger cities because there's more population there. But for me, I mean, some of the issues that I'm looking at are, like, agricultural. So right now there's a right to repair for farmers. I mean, it may apply to other things as well, but their farm equipment, very expensive, kind of complicated. And right now, if something goes wrong with it, they actually have to call someone in from, you know, Cat or Deere or whoever manufactured it to, like, run their little program on the tractor to tell them what's even wrong with it in the first place. So even if it's just something like a spark plug that the farmer could replace themselves, they may have to wait for somebody to come out there and actually run those numbers because they aren't allowed to use that software because it's proprietary. And I think that's wrong. You own it. You should be allowed to fix it. And also, in harvest season, you can't wait like that. You can't afford to wait days, especially with, like, when weather can change so much. Like, if it happens to be really rainy and it's always muddy all the time, you may need to wait for those, like, perfect days. You may not be able to, like, put it off for however long it takes for somebody to come out there. So, I mean, that's one of them. Obviously very agricultural focused. And I mean, there's kind of other things that come down the line like that too. I mean, my dad's a geologist, so I know a fair amount about dirt. And, like, if you look at topsoil, it takes, like, over 100,000 years to get one inch of topsoil. And I can see, like, when they don't, obviously now we have things like no-till that's a little bit better, but I can still see, like, if it rains a lot and the fields have been tilled, then you can see that all the dirt is just washing into the streams and it's going elsewhere. And that's not good for the farmers. It's not really good for people downstream. And, I mean, it's basically just a waste of a very precious resource that I think a lot of people kind of don't think about because, it's dirt. People don't think about dirt. But, you know, I live in the middle of a giant cornfield. Of course I think about it. Like, I see it all the time. So for me, that's kind of the most important things, like, coming from my district. And the things that I want to focus on are things that are actually going to affect people there.
Why do you think it's important for people to come to an event like this and talk to representatives like you?
It's important because otherwise you don't know necessarily anything about them. Like, you can look up their positions online. You can maybe, if they've been in office before, you can see how they vote on things. And that's all very useful. But I think the most useful thing is to actually go and talk to them. First of all, then they know, like, what you think is most important. So, like, for me, I always ask people at the door, like, if there's anything going on in your community you think I should know about, like, let me know. Because maybe if I win and I get into Springfield, maybe there's something I could actually do about it. But if nobody ever tells me, I mean, I'm only one person. I'm only going to know so much, and I'm only going to run into certain experiences, right? Like, you don't know everybody. And the only way for me to actually know, like, what kind of issues affect people is for them to come tell me. And, then you show the representative that you're interested. I mean, you may sway their vote. You may tell them something that they didn't know. And, of course, you can also ask them questions. Like, if there's some specific issue that you think is really important, but that isn't, like, one of their key planks in their platform, then you can ask them about it, like, see what they think about it, maybe make them realize how important it is, or even just see, like, you know, would they support it? Like, if a bill on this came past, like, if there's something that comes down in Springfield, now you have the opportunity to actually tell them about it. I mean, there's lots of bills that happen in Springfield, and they're all very long. So if you notice something in one of them that you think is important, the only way your representative is going to know about it is if you tell them. I mean, maybe somebody else will have told them, but you can't rely on that.
And then is there a specific comment that a resident has addressed to you?
I mean, there have been all sorts. I guess stuff that's been really local is I had somebody tell me that they were pretty sure that their mayor was embezzling money from the town. So, and I don't think they'd ever, clearly nothing had been done about it, and they seem to think it had been going on for years. So for me, I'm like, okay, well, that's definitely something you need to tell someone about. Like, you need to tell your representative, or you need to tell, like, somebody down. They just find, like, it doesn't even matter who you call. If you call somebody who is down in Springfield, or if you meet somebody, then chances are, if they're involved, they may know who you do need to contact, even if they're not the right person. They can be an advocate for you. That's literally their job. So, I mean, that was probably the most wild one that I heard. but, I mean, like, this is a town with, like, you know, maybe a couple hundred people in it, so, you know, they all know what's going on, but maybe they haven't actually said anything. And for me, I was like, well, yeah, that's definitely something you should probably tell your state representative or somebody. So hopefully I've encouraged them to do that, but who knows.
The conversation with Phillips took place at WGLT's Candidate Open House, which you can find a full report on by visiting WZND.com.
Continuing our election coverage, last week I spoke with the president of ISU's College Republicans, Ross Vansel. We talked about the upcoming election and what the Republicans are up to in the lead up, as well as Vansel provided his thoughts on the presidential election.
What are some of the things that the ISU Republicans have been doing to get ready for this upcoming election?
So some of the biggest things that the ISU College Republicans have been doing is just encouraging our members to vote and also getting people onto campaigns to work as door knockers to help local candidates get elected.
And then what have been some of the ways that have been beneficial to this campaign strategy?
I would say the benefit of doing it is really getting people involved in politics and in civic engagement to show what the process looks like. And then when you're actually out at the doors knocking, you get to interact with community members, sometimes students, get to hear their thoughts, and also get to try to just talk about a candidate that you're passionate about.
Are there any candidates that you're particularly strong about?
So I enjoy actually a lot of our local candidates. I am especially like Desi Anderson, who is running for state representative, and Sally Owens, and also Judge Joe McGraw as well.
What are some of their, like for Desi Anderson, for example, what are some of her promises that you will stand by her for?
So, well, first, I think she's a really great person to start with. She has an amazing story where she was an orphan in Bulgaria, and then she was adopted by an American family. And she's really lived the American dream. And I think she understands what Americans need, and especially in the people in this community, because she's lived in this community, and she also has a small business. And so a lot of the things she's promising are to help people get out of our current economic struggles. And I think some of it is trying to help improve or decrease the cost of living, and also cut taxes and decrease regulations so we can have a better economy.
And then do you think there is a difference between there being a presidential election going on compared to if it was 2 years from now where it was just a local election?
I think so. I mean, we historically see higher voting numbers when there's a presidential election just because the presidential election is so televised. It's so just put in our face because it's national with millions and millions and millions of dollars, and everybody's talking about it. So people are more likely to get out to vote if there's something that's really motivating them, and the presidential election often does that.
And then did you watch the debate?
I watched most of the presidential debate. I was interrupted by something else, but I also watched most of the vice presidential debate as well.
Were there any cases within that debate that you want to talk about?
I think overall the presidential debate was not especially productive, just because there was a lot of mindless bickering instead of talking about policy. They were more worried about calling each other names than, I don't know, talking about policy. So I didn't especially love the presidential debate. I thought it was just not very useful. But the vice presidential debate, actually, I found much better. I think both candidates really talk about policies, what their campaign believes, and what their campaign wants to do. And so I thought the vice presidential debate was more useful in that fact.
And then going back to the local elections, what is a future goal that you want to see happen with McLean County?
So I would love if McLean County would elect more Republicans, and especially Desi Anderson and Sally Owens, to represent us in our state House and Senate. I mean, that's what I would love for McLean County.
And if this was going to happen, what would be the most beneficial action that would bring to the community?
I think the most beneficial action would probably just having people vote just in the communities, maybe people that don't usually vote, just getting out there and making sure that the people that are more conservative are going out to the polls and voting and not staying home on election day.
And then ISU is currently having early voting going on in the Bone. Can you give your thoughts on why this is important to students and the community here?
I think it's really important because a lot of students can't go on election day to vote, and especially this election year where the university and state have not allowed ISU to have the day off as we did 2 years ago. So some students might have classes all day and they won't be able to get there. So having early voting allows any student that wants to vote the opportunity to vote. So I think it's just important to be there because everybody knows, all students know where the Bone Student Center is, and it's really easy to get there and easy to find everything. Where some, if you don't live on campus, it can be harder to find your polling place. And so I think it's a great way for students to be able to vote.
And then what are your personal thoughts on ISU not giving students a day off?
I understand why they can't do it with the requirement for how many days they have to teach in different labs and everything. But I wish the state would have mandated, again, that all universities do it, because then the university can't say no if the state mandates it like they did 2 years ago. So I would have liked to see the day off for students, but I understand why they can't at the time. But I really would have liked if the state would have mandated it like they did 2 years ago.
And then that's all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else you would like to add about what you guys are up to or the party in general?
I'm excited to see all of the vote come in. I'm hoping that our local candidate can win, and I hope that Republican candidates all over the United States are able to win.
To keep up with election coverage, be sure to tune in to WZND.com, where the WZND news team has an election show on November 5th at 7 p.m. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with some exciting stories right here on 103.3 WZND.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it, so far we've talked about local elections with state rep candidate Morgan Phillips and a check-in with Ross Vansel and the College Republicans.
This Tuesday, Connect Transit buses will be offering free rides to everyone to help connect people on Election Day. According to their press release, a lack of personal transportation leads to a 20% drop in voter turnout. Connect Transit is hoping to make it easier for people to vote with their free rides, as they have done in past years.
Governor J.B. Pritzker announced that applications are now open for Illinois' Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, which aims to help people in need keep their energy bills paid. The state program has a $226 million fund, which Pritzker says will help keep people warm as temperatures quickly drop. The application process can be started on helpillinoisfamilies.com.
Bloomington has begun preparing for their annual Turkey Trot, a community run that takes place on Thanksgiving morning. The run will start at Miller Park, as usual, and will be the 46th year the run has taken place. Anyone can show up without registering, but those who do register will be eligible to win prizes at the run.
Tomorrow, the town of Normal will be voting on a six-month ban on new Airbnbs and similar short-term rentals. The prominence of these STRs has led to many noise complaints in Normal and has contributed to the housing shortage. If the council were to approve a six-month ban, it would take place on the 14th. Airbnb bans have become more popular in many cities recently, mostly in response to the housing crisis.
Election Day is this Tuesday, so make sure you are registered to vote. I-9 registration has closed, but in Illinois, you can still register day of at your polling place. All you need is two forms of ID, at least one which has your home address. If you aren't sure if you're registered or not, you can check your status online.
For our last interview of the show, I sat down with Martha Horst, the chairperson of ISU's Academic Senate. As a member of the RISE Task Force, Horst has been put in charge of the budget reductions that ISU is going through.
So can I ask, just to get a better picture, what exactly is the Academic Senate?
Sure. The Academic Senate is the primary shared governance organization for Illinois State University. We have 30 faculty that are elected, including non-tenure track representative. We have 20 students, which come from Student Government Association. And then there's also ex officio members, the president, provost, vice presidents, some AVPs, that kind of thing.
So y'all had that meeting a week or two ago regarding all the new budget stuff. Can you tell me much about your role in that meeting?
Sure. Well, so I chair the Senate, and so we organize. So whenever the budget, we get an annual review of the budget proposal that's going to the board. Okay, and so the board meeting was on October 11th, and I think our budget review was on October 9th. But during that meeting, Dan Petrie, the interim vice president of finance and planning, not only presented their proposed budget, but he also presented an overview of some of the financial difficulties the university is facing and the causes of them. And yeah, so we also had discussions about that.
I sort of got the impression, talking to people, that there is a feeling that there is less money going around to student organizations, to staff wages, to everything. Is that an accurate picture?
Well, the university has enacted a 2% cut, and so yes, there's less money going around. And so that's part of how the president is trying to address some of the trends he sees in the budget, or the cabinet sees in the budget. So basically the trends they're seeing are that the revenues are going up at a certain rate and the expenses are going up at a faster rate. So our expenses are going to exceed our revenues in the near future.
I see. In the State of the University a few weeks ago.
That's right.
I remember the president talking about how increasing tuition is not a sustainable solution to this problem.
Right.
So what is the solution? Are there ideas in the works for more income to the university?
Yes. Well, not necessarily. I can't address the income part. But that's what I am co-chairing along with Amanda Hendricks, but we're co-chairing this RISE task force, and one of our main charges is to consider how to align expenses with expenditures in the university. Right now, for instance, all departments just get historical funding. And so it's not tied, for instance, to, like, if your number of faculty go up, kind of. And so we're going to explore other ways of, other budget models.
Can you expand on that at all?
Or? Not really.
Okay.
I'm a professor of the School of Music. You know, but I have a basic understanding of it. Uh-huh. But we're going to work with a consulting firm, Grant Thornton, who's going to walk us through other ways that we could structure the budget. And we're also just going to understand the trends that the cabinet has been observing in more detail.
Is there anything you want to put out there, like, for people who are worried about where all of this is going, budget cuts are a scary thing, what would you want to put out there for people to hear?
Sure. There are a lot of universities that are in trouble. We are not one of those universities, right? We are more in a position where we are seeing trends and we are trying to react to those trends. You know, if we don't react to those trends in 2, 3, 4 years, we could be one of those universities like University of Connecticut that's like cutting 70 programs. We don't want to be one of those universities. So President Torvalds has charged us to really take charge of the situation right now and work as a community to try to address it in a proactive way. Right. So people should be aware that this is going on, and it's going on in a national trend and an international trend too. You're part of something that's, it's not necessarily something that's local to ISU.
If you want to find the full story, visit the news tab on WZND.com.
ISU sports was back in action this weekend. The football team earned its sixth win of the season after taking down Youngstown State 23-16. Tommy Rittenhouse led the Redbirds with 153 passing yards and scored once on the ground. Winkers Wright forced his way for 104 rushing yards and found the end zone off a Rittenhouse pass in the second quarter. With the win, the Redbirds jumped to 3-2 in conference play and 6-3 overall. The team will fly to Northern Iowa to face the Panthers next Saturday at 1 p.m.
ISU volleyball snapped its 5-match losing streak after sweeping Indiana State last night. Freshman Olivia Chaputa led the team with 11 kills and was the only player to reach double digits. Kennedy Guest was a defensive force for the Redbirds, denying 8 kill attempts by the Sycamores. The Redbirds jumped back to over 500 in conference with the win at 7-6. And at 12-14 overall. They will be back at CEFQ on Friday to host Southern Illinois at 6 p.m.
Due to an Erica Wells goal, ISU soccer advanced to the second round of the NBC tournament. ISU becomes the first team in history as a seventh seed to move on, and newly appointed head coach Riley DeRose earns her first postseason win with the Redbirds. The team will face the number 3 UIC Flames on the Flames home turf at 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today, we looked at candidates in the upcoming election, a check-in with the College Republicans, and an in-depth look at the changes to ISU's budget. For Second Look, I'm Joey Delahunty.
And I'm Jaden Cohn, and we will see you back here at noon next week. Thank you for listening.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.